Honorable members, esteemed guests, that is Miss Tumelo Ngwane, the Chief Director Incentives DTI, and Miss Mandy Sasilo, Acting DDG, Tourism Enterprise Industry Development. You are welcome. In fact, here we are having a hearing from your department on tourism assistance program in respect of job creation and sustainable livelihoods through the small, micro, and medium enterprises. Your deliberation, the maximum time is 5 minutes, and I think it could be less, but not more. So that's 60 minutes is the maximum. And then secondly, we shall be having deliberations, questions and answers, and clarifications. Then after that, we shall be having committee announcements, and then that is how our meeting is going to go. We expect to be with you for 2 hours, 60 minutes. And the other 60 minutes, and that is the maximum amount of time. It will be less, but definitely it won't be more. So let me then hand over to you. Over to you, Ms. Mandita, Acting DDG.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Tumelo Ngwane. I'm the acting DDG of the Enterprise Organization, which is responsible for administering incentives. I've got with me Ms. Mandy Sisilo, who's the acting director in our tourism division that's responsible for policy on tourism in the Department of Trade and Industry. The focus of our presentation today will be on the tourism support program, which is an incentive that we have within the DTI that is focused on the tourism industry. We have a number of incentives within the DTI that are focused on different areas. For example, we have the Black Business Compliance Development Program, which is focused on small black-owned businesses, as well as the Cooperative Incentive Scheme, which is also focused on small micro enterprises. But for the purposes of this presentation, Chair, I'm going to focus on the tourism support program because it's specifically focused on the area of your responsibility. In terms of the presentation, I will try and locate the tourism support program within the National Strategy of Tourism, give you an overview of what the program offers, what are the eligibility criteria, how we evaluate applications that we receive, what qualifies, what doesn't qualify, What are the conditions that we've put in place before we make payments, the process that we've got in place for applications, and just to give you a sense of how the program has performed thus far. The Tourism Support Program is a sub-program of the Enterprise Investment Program. The Enterprise Investment Program consists of two main programs. One is the Tourism Support Program, which will be the focus of the discussion today, and the Manufacturing Investment Program. The Tourism Support Program is focused on investments in tourism, and the Manufacturing Investment Program supports investments in the manufacturing sector. In terms of how this incentive program supports the tourism strategy, it's largely focused at trying to promote sustainable job creation in line with the Tourism Act mandate, where this scheme contributes is around sustainable job creation. It does this through focusing on two key objectives of trying to improve geographic spread as well as promoting transformation within the tourism industry by acting in a focused way to try and facilitate a product platform within the tourism sector. The aim of the Tourism Support Program is to stimulate job creation outside the traditional tourism destination clusters. The outcome that we're trying to achieve is to increase a broad-based BEE participation within the tourism sector, and also to try and increase tourism outside the three main metros of Etegwini, Cape Town, and Johannesburg. Although we do support projects that are locating within these within marginalized areas in these metros. For example, a project in Alexandra might qualify for an incentive, whereas a project in Sandton might not necessarily be eligible for an incentive. But maybe before I carry on, I should just try and contextualize why this program is structured in this particular way. And the DTI has had a number of incentives over a number of years, and this program replaces what we used to have in the department, the Small Medium Enterprise Development Program, which also had a program focused on supporting tourism investment. And what we found through the experience of managing that incentive scheme was that, some of the projects that we supported didn't necessarily need the funding that we gave them. Secondly, that although where the incentive made the most impact was with small to medium-sized enterprises, but that also the incentive supported a lot of B&B establishments, but that many of those B&B establishments that we supported did not necessarily need the incentive that we gave them. They were mostly what we would call lifestyle investors, people of a particular age who had a particular type income, who had retired perhaps, and wanted them to release part of their property to convert it into a B&B. And that in terms of contribution to the economy, that these types of investments were making very little contribution to the economy. So the way the program has structured has tried to focus largely on the key objectives that government is trying to achieve of job creation. We've built in certain criteria to make sure that we can broaden participation. And thirdly, we found that a lot of the investments that we supported were largely in the main metros of Etegwini, Cape Town, and Joburg. And we found that if you look at those three main metros, there's a range of tourism investments that are already in place, and the range of those tourism investments are more extensive in those metros than in any other part of the country. So that's why specifically we've tried to write those areas outside the program. This particular program was launched in July 2008, and it will be available until 2014. Although at various intervals we are continuing to monitor performance, and as we go along we will tweak the rules and the requirements to make sure that the scheme continues to meet the objectives that have been identified and the needs out there. What the scheme offers is a grant which is 30% of your qualifying investment in furniture, equipment, vehicles, land, and buildings. The maximum grant that you can get is up to $30 million, and it's calculated depending on the size of investment you make. There are three different categories of types of investments. Projects that are investing below $5 million can get a grant which is equal to 30% of their qualifying investment cost. So you'll see that majority of the investment, where most of the money is going to, is to smaller enterprises. The idea is to give the larger incentive to smaller enterprises. And the reason why it's payable over a three-year period is because in order to get the incentive, you need to make some kind of investment first before you can get the investment. So we spread it over a number of years in order to give people an opportunity to make the investment and then claim for the grant. Projects that are above $5 million and below $30 million get a grant of between 15 and 30%, and it's payable over a two-year period. Projects that are above $30 million get a grant which is 15% of their qualifying investment costs. Again, it's payable over a two-year period. So the larger projects, we try to encourage them to make their investments a lot quicker. In terms of the type of project we're targeting at, we support both new investments as well as expansion projects, so existing tourism facilities that are wanting to expand their operations. The maximum size of project we look at is $200 million. Although we will accept projects that are above $200 million, but any investments that you make over $200 million, you will not receive an additional grant on those investments. We support both local projects by local investors as well as foreign-owned investment projects. In order to participate in the program, you need to be a formal entity that's registered, a company, a community, a trust, or a cooperative. And one key criteria is that when you apply, you can't have taken the investments that you would like to qualify for into operation. This is often an area that raises quite a lot of discussion. We have found that if you already, the key role of incentive is to try and encourage industry to behave in a particular way. What we're trying to do with this is we're trying to incentivize, to encourage industry, tourism industry, to create more jobs, look at the principles of broad-based black economic empowerment, and also to spread tourism activity around the country rather than focusing just in certain clusters in certain parts of the country. But also what we're trying to do is trying to focus on tourism investments that need the grant, investments that would not have otherwise taken place without the grant. And we're saying that if you already have assets and you've already started operation, it suggests that the need for the grant is not quite as strong, for want of a better word, as somebody who's got a plan and is wanting funding to start an operation. We're saying that where we can make the biggest difference is in instances where investment projects are not yet on the ground in terms of new investment projects. I've mentioned that one of the key objectives that we're trying to do with the incentive program is to create jobs. And what we're trying to do with industry is have a quid pro quo situation where we give you money, and in return for the money, you give something back to the country, and that's in a form of jobs. So we have a minimum job requirement for projects that take part in the program. If your investment size is $5 million or below, in order to take part in the program, you need to make a commitment of creating, at minimum, 8 job. And we recognize that in some instances the 8 job requirement is high. So we've made a provision that for black owned enterprises, we will accept 3 jobs, because when you look at some of the areas where the black enterprises are trying to establish a B&E, for instance, to try and force people to create 8 jobs would make those projects unsustainable. The principle also is the higher the investment you make, the higher the job requirements that we've put in place in the program. And again, the reason we have the job requirement is also informed by the previous program, where in the previous program we had a large number of projects that we supported, but those projects created a very low number of jobs. So we've, together with the Department of Tourism, we've done an analysis of the projects that we've supported under the Small Medium Enterprise Development Program. And this is the number that we've arrived at to support the type of investment that we're looking to support. We not only saying we want jobs, but what we're trying to encourage is that those jobs must also be decent jobs. How we measure decent jobs is that we put in a requirement that those jobs that you create must pay wages in line with the hospitality sector wages as determined by the Department of Labor. Secondly, in order to participate in the program, you need to achieve a broad-based BEE contributor status of level 4. So anybody that's below level 4 cannot participate in the program. Thirdly, you need to locate outside the 3 metros of Cape Town, eThekwini, and Johannesburg. And although, as I've mentioned before, that marginalized areas within the metros are allowed to apply. And how we define marginalized areas are areas which have higher than average unemployment rates. And then, as I've mentioned earlier, that you need to apply and receive approval before you take your assets into commercial production. What we've tried to do is make a distinction between small projects and large projects. And how we define small projects are projects that are making investments of 5 million and below. And large projects are projects that are making investments above 5 million. The principle is that we've tried to make requirements slightly easier for projects that are below 5 million and make projects that are above 5 million jump through more hoops. We've assumed that projects are above 5 million, that the main market failure for those projects is around access to finance. For projects that are above 5 million, we know there's often issues around risk associated with certain types of projects and the types of returns that are made on those projects. So we require projects that apply for an incentive to demonstrate commitment to the project. We look at the structure of the funding, how they're funded. We look at a business plan and just check that business plan makes sense. And we ask them to substantiate their need for funding. For larger projects, in addition to that, what we ask them to do is demonstrate a need and a funding gap. And we've defined certain criteria to try and test that need. And it's something that's very difficult to do in an incentive. But we've tried to identify projects that would not otherwise go ahead without an incentive, which is a very difficult thing to do. But we've defined needs around levels of debt, for example, that a particular incentive may be exposed to, looking at foreign investments in particular instances where projects may be looking at perhaps more than one location to locate in and so on. And in terms of our evaluation, for projects below 5 million, we just check the business plan and make sure that it meets the minimum requirements, that it makes sense. And for larger projects, we try and do a much more in-depth analysis and, again, testing this idea that there is a funding gap in that project. In terms of the type of activities that we support, there are five main categories of activities that we support. Firstly, it's accommodation, your B&Bs, guest houses, and so on. We support transport services that are focused at the tourism sector. Thirdly, tour operators. Fourthly, cultural services, for example, your museums, your cultural villages, and so on. And recreation services, again, that are specifically focused at tourism. And the main departure from previous programs is that this as well has tried to extend the type of tourism support we offer. In previous programs, we've tended to only focus on accommodation facilities. There are certain things that we exclude, things like takeaway restaurants, nightclubs, and so on, franchise restaurants. Where we support restaurants, they need to be part of a tourism facility and attached to that tourism facility. Conference facilities, again, must be part of accommodation and be attached to accommodation. We don't consider retail operations. And also craft facilities would only be considered if, again, they form part of a tourism establishment. For example, a craft a shop that's located next to a museum or an accommodation facility. The type of assets that we give you an incentive on, it's furniture, fittings, and equipment. Secondly, owned land and buildings. They obviously have to be zoned correctly. And in terms of land, we limit land to be 20% of your qualifying investment in the cost of building. So we want most incentives to go towards buildings rather than land. We also support projects that are not necessarily owning their own land and buildings but are leasing. We make some contribution towards the lease in calculating the grant. We also incentivize commercial vehicles, but again, in the case of commercial vehicles, we limit the incentive that we give on commercial vehicles to be at least 20% of the investment that you're making in other assets. There are certain things that we don't support, certain assets that don't qualify, things like passenger vehicles, imported second-hand assets, commercial vehicles that aren't tourism-focused, and a key thing we don't support, refurbishment. So if you're a hotel looking to upgrade or refurbish, this is not the program for that. There's a separate program that's been developed that looks at issues around competitiveness and so on, but the focus here is to look at substantially new investments, substantial expansions that are going to create new jobs. I've said expansions, we're looking at substantial expansions, and how we define substantial expansions is that in order to qualify for an expansion, you need to increase your capacity by 35%. And how we define capacity is, for instance, if you are a lodge with 10 rooms, in order to qualify for an expansion, you need to increase your 10 rooms by another 4 in order to meet the requirements. Secondly, we look at your asset base. We look at the cost of your assets in the base year, and in the first year of the project, that asset base needs to increase by at least 35%. Also, to ensure that projects aren't just applying to us for refurbishment, we have a turnover requirement that in the first and second year you need to meet certain minimums of turnover. And again, the issue of jobs, we increase the requirements of jobs for expansions. Again, it would depend on the size of investment that you're making. Before we make payments, there are certain things that we look at, and those issues speak to the objectives of the program. When firstly, before we make a payment, we want you to make the investment that you projected that you would make. We recognize that people, when people apply, they're giving us projected figures, and often the reality is very different when you get to implementing a project. So we hold you to at least 70% of the investment that you promised us. So unless you make 70% of the investment that you promised, you will not receive the grant. Secondly, the same with turnover. And again, jobs. Unless you produce the jobs that you committed to at the beginning of the project, you would not be able to receive the incentive. Again, wages. You need to ensure that you pay wages at the hospitality sector wages. And fourthly, the BE level. You need to maintain at minimum a level 4 contributor status. And these conditionalities are important because they're a way that we measure to ensure that in terms of the objectives of the scheme, we have some way of ensuring that or holding projects accountable to the objectives that we want to achieve. In terms of our process, applicants will submit an application, there'll be an evaluation process, they're taken to an adjudication committee, which would then make a decision to approve or not approve a project. Once you've been given an approval, you can then start with your project. And once you've made your investment, you can submit your first claim to the DTI to confirm that you've made certain investments. We would then do an inspection to ensure that the investment is there, the jobs are there, you're paying at the right wages, at the right wage levels, and your BE commitments are met. And you can claim either annually or every 6 months. And again, at each payment point, we measure to check that you've met the milestones and certain deliverables that you are supposed to achieve. Just some information on what the program has achieved so far. The slide is slightly different from the slide that you have with you. The information you have reflects what the program had achieved last financial year. But I thought it might be useful for the purposes of this to maybe take it from inception to date. And so from inception to date, the scheme has approved 220 projects. Of those projects, the investment that they project, so this is not necessarily the investment that they've made, but at application stage, this is what they projected the size of the investment to be, was 3.8 billion, and the number of jobs that they projected to create was 5,421. These approvals represent a grant of about 490 million. Which roughly works out to about the amount it costs incentive-wise to create a job to just over 90,000. 85% of the projects that we have approved are new establishments. So they're tourism investments which were not in place before the incentive. 15% are projects that existed but are wanting to expand capacity. Of these projects, we have, at the end of March this year, we had already received confirmation that 115 had already started. You can apply up to a year before you make an investment, but we know that of these 228 projects that we've approved, at the end of March this year, 115 had already started commercial operations. We also know that 93% of these projects have a BE level 4 status. Other 7% are level 3 and above, so better. In terms of all the projects that we receive and adjudicate, 69% have been approved. The others that aren't approved are projects that either don't meet the requirements or projects where often because we have certain minimum requirements, we say we want 8 jobs, people will apply and say, I will create 8 jobs. But what we do is we look at your financials and your projections that you've given us and test them for reasonableness to say, can somebody who's generating this amount of income, if we're forcing them to create X amount of jobs and pay these type of salary levels, do we realistically think they can sustain the project? And the reason why that's important is because we don't want to approve a whole lot of projects that never get to a situation where they can claim for us, from us, because before you get a grant, you need to invest, and then you get a grant at various tranches. So it's important that we assess and evaluate the projects we receive to make sure that they can establish and that they'd be able to meet the performance requirements that they're committing themselves to. Just looking at that data a bit further, what's interesting as well is that 56% of the projects that we've approved are projects below 5 million, so they're small projects. 44% are large projects above 5 million. The average investment of the ones that are small is 3.4 million. The average number of jobs that they're creating is 8 jobs, and they're getting a grant of 2.7 million. Again, this is a slide that you don't have in your packs, but it just takes the data from inception to the end of July to look at what type of investments are these in terms of size. Again, the larger projects, the average size of investment is 35 million, so they're fairly large, and the projected number of jobs is 46. It's too early within the life of the program to be doing an impact assessment because the program is only started a year and a half ago. When we get to a 3-year interval, we will then be doing, once we've given opportunity for more of these projects to establish, we will then be doing a review and looking at the performance of the program. But as we are implementing, we are monitoring and getting feedback from the market about certain things that we need to tweak to ensure that we can meet our commitments. And we've already had one small review where we've made revisions to the program, and we're due for another miniature review later this year. In terms of geographic spread, I mentioned that one of the key things that we were trying to achieve is a greater spread of economic activity. What's interesting is when you look at most incentives that we have in the DTI, when you look at where the activity is focused, it tends to be Western Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal. And what's interesting with this is that the economic activity, in terms of the type of projects that we supported, they are spread throughout the country. When you look at Western Cape, for example, MIP is the Manufacturing Investment Program. Manufacturing Investment Program, 28% of the approvals are from the Western Cape, but in the Tourism Support Program, we've got 16% in the Western Cape. On the other hand, in the Northwest, the Tourism Support Program has 11%, whereas the manufacturing sector only has 4%. So this is just to give you a sense of the spread of the project in terms of where the projects are located. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mwane. Is there a second presentation?
No, no, I haven't.
Okay. Okay. So the project is effective from the 8th of from July 2008 until 2014, payable within 2 to 3 years. Eh?
Yes, depending on size.
Depending on size.
The projects below 5 million are paid over 3 years, and
yes,
the ones above 5 million are paid over 2 years.
Okay, and then the key criterion for projects, is it for grants or loans? Which is the projects that have not taken place? Is it grants or loans?
It's a grant. It's a non-taxable cash grant.
Okay, and I see that you, for 5 million rands, you discriminate between blacks and non-blacks. What is the reason?
For, can you repeat that, sir?
For you say that for grants that 5 million rands, if you are white, I assume you've got to create 8 jobs, and then if you are black, you've got to create 3 jobs. What is the reason?
Again, this is a modification we made to the program based on feedback that we received from the market. When we first launched the program, there was a requirement that for every project that participates in the program that's 5 million or below, it needs to create a minimum of 8 jobs. And there was an outcry, I guess, from certain sections of the market to say, when you look at, for example, investments B&B, for instance, in a township, when you're talking about broadening participation, that there's a lot of projects perhaps in townships, in certain rural areas where people might not have had opportunities in the past to take advantage of opportunities in the tourism sector. And if we're making a requirement that people need to create 8 jobs at minimum, we then making the entry barrier for those jobs, for those projects, very high, and that perhaps for those projects we need to lower the barrier, and hence the relaxation to say for black-owned projects, we would make a requirement for job creation of 3 jobs. It's also informed by the performance of the previous program, which this replaces, the SMEDP. If you look at the profile of people that benefited from the SMEDP, largely there were white-owned businesses and very little black-owned businesses participated in that program. So there was a feeling that if we increased the job requirement, we would be excluding a lot of small micro-businesses that may want to take, black-owned micro-businesses that may want to take advantage of this program. Yes, we say that if you are in Johannesburg Metro or Cape Town or eThekwini, you can't be part of this program. However, if you are in a marginalized area within one of those metros, then we would accept a project from those metros. What we've also made provision for is for projects that are perhaps offering new market segments that we currently do not have in South Africa. In those instances, we will allow projects in the metros to apply if they significantly extend the product platform or the market segment of the tourism industry.
Mm-hmm. Jane, then Greg, then Mrs. Shin, then Mama Chulat.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to ask this question because I heard they said they said they have already assisted 220, if I get them correctly. So I want them to do the breakdown according to the provinces so that we must see how deep or how far this sector goes to. The second one is the pre-screen of application. I just want to know if sometimes or maybe when the applicant doesn't make it, do you sometimes tell the applicant why they didn't pass, why you didn't approve their business plan or whatever. And then apart from these big posters that I sometimes see in the big cities and whatever, what is the other marketing strategy, especially to the rural? Because why I'm saying so, when I see what you are saying, it seems to me you're still biased into these big metros. Lastly, according to me, your criteria that we are using, especially of payback, the money that they suppose, if you have funded somebody, is still, to me, is still a gatekeeping of people who wanted to venture into the business, not having money, but the manner in which you stipulate your payment, it seems to me, and maybe if you can prove me wrong, it seems to me you still giving those people that have money. You borrow people who have money. Those who doesn't have, it means they won't borrow, because of this payment that you wanted them to give you. Lastly, Chairperson, you said you find there are some ventures that you don't fund. So I want to know if, as you said, you fund those people who are buying. Maybe, let's say, I'm venturing into the tourism, because we are speaking about the tourism. You said you assist those, you can borrow those people money. I just want to ask, if I want to buy taxis for tourism, can you borrow me money? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I have a number of substantive questions, but it's quite difficult when it's so unclear what really is being driven at here. So I'd like to just ask a few very short things on clarity. My first point is, who's a black person? Are we talking about so-called brown people and Indians as well? I don't know. I mean, what is the definition of black in this presentation? In this slide, talking about the summary of program performance to date, in the very first bullet, it talks about projected investments and projected jobs. We've now got an update, bearing in mind this program started in July 08, so it's been 2 years, and we're still using the words projected. Surely by now, we know. I mean, we're supposed to put out annual financial statements within a certain time period after year end. I'm surprised we're still talking about projected jobs and projected investments. Either we know or we don't. Then the third point is, in order to not lose this money, you have to achieve, amongst other things, 70% of your projected investment. Now, this is a percentage. They're talking about 30% of the money that you've already invested. So if you've invested 5 million rand, you can go and get what they call a grant for 30%, which is 1.5 million rand. Very simple. I don't understand how you have to achieve that projected investment, because the whole thrust of the presentation was that you couldn't actually go and get this money first. You first had to make the investment, and then you could get, in a sense, a 30% subsidization of it. Okay? Then the whole concept of the grant confuses me. A grant is something that you get. It's not something you pay back. Something you pay back is a loan. Now, is this a grant or is it a loan? Because if it's like a start-off amount for your business, which you never have to repay, then it's a grant. Okay? It's like countries get grants from overseas. You don't have to pay it back. It's a gift. If you have to pay it back, which the presentation time and time again says, within 3 years or whatever, depending on the size of the amount given, then it's a loan. So please can we clarify, is it a loan? Because if we're saying it's to be paid back, then it's not a grant. We mustn't actually confuse the issue. So those are the questions I have on clarity. The last one is on the slide on page 10, when it talks about how many projects have been approved, whether you take the slide that we have or the one that we didn't get, and how much money has been made, and again, use the word grant, available for the TSP. So on the written one, well, let's take the latest one, because that's the year-to-date figures, but more current. 220 projects, we were told, which led to a commitment of 419 million rand. Now, I work that out to be something like 2.5 million average, a little bit less, 2.4 million average per business. That's not in accordance with the slide we saw a little bit later, which we don't have in our presentation, which talks about something like half, 44%, 56%, I can't remember which. It's very difficult when you have to do shorthand as well as be able to write down and listen. We don't have that pie chart. But that pie chart talks about 44%. Is that the red one? I can't see. Okay, what is that? The red one, greater than, is those are projects more than 5 million rand. 44% of the projects are more than 5 million rand. Now, that's impossible, actually, and if you read that together with this other thing that we have, because on average, it's only 2.4 million. Unless I'm missing something there, but, you know, that's in the form of the presentation. All right, so I think these are substantial areas we need to clarify, because without that, I can't really understand this presentation, at least. I mean, I don't think I'm the only one either. In terms of a more substantive question, Chairperson, I have several very fundamental problems with this presentation. One of the things that was said was that it's too early to make an assessment. Whichever slide you believe, whichever slide is right, at the very least, we're talking nearly half a billion rand of taxpayers' money now been put into this project. Half a billion rand. And it's too early to tell. We don't have figures. That cannot be right. Surely by now we know whether these enterprises are flourishing, whether they're handing in tax returns, whether in fact they're paying back their loans. How can we say 2 years down the line and half a billion rand spent that it's too early to tell whether it is successful or not? Now, my second question is this. When I look to you like I'm a white person, for all I know, my great-grandmother might have not been white. Does that make me colored? In which case, do I qualify for this grant or not? Or is it a loan? I mean, I can't understand how someone in matric this year, if they get to write their matric this year, and getting a matric certificate, matric exemption, and wanting to go into tourism next year, that person would have been 2 years old when this country became democratic in 1994. Are we saying that that person now, on the basis of the color of their skin, can or cannot get this loan? Because for one of them, the hurdle is set at 3 jobs, and for another person, the hurdle is set at 8 jobs. I mean, I actually find that very problematic. There's another word I'd like to use, but I don't dare use it. But I find it very problematic. Surely there's got to be either an age qualification here which doesn't penalize the youngsters coming out of school, all of whom are going to have a very hard time getting a job, and surely we need to take into account President Zuma's own observation that poverty is a challenge in this country that actually affects all communities. He's visited, for example, poor brown and poor white communities. He probably has also visited poor Indian communities. And why must the criteria be raised? Why can't we empower people based on the economic circumstances, for example? And it doesn't matter then what race you are. It should only matter whether you have the means to get into this business or not, and if you have the ability. So I struggle to understand why we're setting the bar different for people for different race groups, and it seems to me that in order for this bar to be set at all, you have to be classified as a certain race. And I thought we moved away from that in this country in 1994. Now, my next question is, I don't know what interest has been charged on these loans / grants. The problem with this presentation is that it's 12 pages long and there's one slide precisely on the financial impact of this project. And actually telling us, has it worked? There's nothing in here that tells us whether it's worked. Compared to what? What interest is being charged? Why is it not, in fact, a better idea to actually ask the banks to make these judgments? And if we're worried about the riskiness of the investment, that's where the first light should be flashing. But we could, for example, rather have the department guaranteeing the loans. Then we wouldn't need the siege bureaucracy to manage the entire thing. And we could use business principles to decide who gets and who doesn't. And the government's social and political imperatives could still be addressed by the fact that banks could be encouraged to lend to more risky customers who have been historically disadvantaged, because we all have sympathy for that. But they could then give the banks the comfort zone they need by guaranteeing the investment. I mean, that could be an alternative. But I don't know whether it's an alternative, because I can't tell whether this project is working. And that's my last question, Chairperson. I really would like the presenters to actually give some thought to this and give us a measured answer. What does this investment cost? We know we've paid out nearly R500 million of taxpayers' money to fund these 220 projects, as it says in this one slide. But what is the cost of the DTI's own cost? I mean, what are the staff complement that has to manage this entire thing? What is the salary bill? What are the write-offs that would be associated with a project like this? What are the administrative costs? What is the true cost, other than the money just being paid out? Can we hear how much money has been spent by DTI to get this program running in everything, not just the direct costs funded to these particular businesses? And then on that basis, a more measured, a more full disclosure of the financial impacts, both positive and negative, then I think the committee is in a position to engage properly with this presentation and assess whether, in fact, this is the best way to do it or not. It might be, but we've given no information to actually make our own judgment on that. And I find that very problematic, because you can't ask the committee to look at one-tenth of a picture and then make a judgment. We need to see the whole picture, and we haven't got that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Grumbo. But perhaps let us look at the policy areas and then let us ask that to the minister. Because really some of the policy areas belong to the minister. Let them talk about the implementation areas. Mamshe.
Thank you, Chairperson. One thing I'd like to know is what is the department's annual budget for this program? And we've got no idea how much money has been set aside for this. And does these loans, stroke grants, come from a specific fund, or is it just generally out of DTI's budget? So I'd actually like to know what it's actually costing and where that money comes from. A problem I have with this is that its focus is to create jobs. Now, that's all very well, but tourism is a highly competitive, cost-sensitive market. Is anywhere in deciding whether to grant these loans, stroke grants, is the market need taken into account? I mean, it's all very well to say we're going to establish or fund 4 B&Bs in outer wherever, but is anybody going to use them? Are we actually just establishing businesses for the sake of establishing businesses and creating jobs? Are there actually customers for those jobs? Nowhere in this does it actually say that a market analysis is done, and I find that problematic. Wanting to know when you pull the plug on failed businesses. Have any of these businesses, I guess they've been going for 2 years, have any of them failed? And if they do fail, what do you do to, do you recover the assets? Does the state take over the assets? What payback does the state get? I think, and also, yes, when it comes to making the decisions as to who gets the money, is anybody in the DTI who makes his party to that decision have any experience at all in making money out of the tourism sector? I think I'll leave it there.
That's it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mengkwana Rauta Rupili. Can you explain us, most of my question I had asked by the previous members. Who are these level 4 and level 3? How do you monitor these projects or let's say whatever grants or whatever? I have the problem when listening to you while talking about the, this is the improvement of people's lives. And you think of the deep rural people, like you mentioned that it's still focusing on these three big cities. These are big provinces, which have the privilege of having, the tourism is still high.
Excuse me, ma. In fact, it is the opposite. They exclude as much as possible. Yes.
So let me check it. That's what we are thinking of developing those disadvantages. But one has a problem, like I said, that my question is partly covered by Grombo, that how can a person qualify when before he didn't have, and he's supposed to pay back the money? Thank you very much. And the other thing, that's okay.
Mama Kasi, Mamu Shobe, then Mamu Skala.
Thank you, Chairperson. I welcome also the presentation, but really it is worrying. The fact that we don't understand the loan or this money that is payable in 3 years, what kind of, and also that the Western Cape KZN and Gauteng is excluded. Did you look at the issue of KZN and having a vast rural area that does not have a tourism at all? Even in the Western Cape, we have rural areas that are not considered as tourism destinations. I think then in future that also needs to look into. Because if you are talking of tourism, you will find tourism in Cape Town, in towns. You will find tourism in KwaZulu Natal, you will find tourism in Gauteng, you know, forgetting the rural areas of those communities that nothing is going to them. I think that is very important to look into. And also, the scales, your scales, that when you start to give these loans, 5 million, there are those then who want to start business, who cannot afford to start in 5 million. At least that you need also to consider, that if there are those who are starting, then they cannot afford to pay back this big amount of money, these 5 million and the like. They will start lower. Also, then, how can you then cater for those that have not at all, but they want to start up something, and they want money from this DTI? Because really, Insikas and Kulas are there. We've tried, we're hitting ourselves against the wall because we're coming back with nothing. So we thought that this DTI will also accommodate those then who can start small. They grow then within the business sector. Because you cannot start high, you start from the ground and then you prosper. So I think that will be very important. Thank you, Chapa.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson.
I would just refer to a few slides because I think some of the concerns have already been raised by other members. Now, if you look at slide 6, I want to refer you to slide 6. Slide 6. Yeah, I think the last point about repayments, for instance, we expect them to pay over a period of 2 years, if, for instance, they've been granted that amount of the fund. But generally, I want to find out whether you do not have constraints in terms of the repayments that are made. In other words, I'm trying to find out whether there are any people who find it difficult to repay according to your condition, basing myself on the fact that some of the beneficiaries of the grant would have been people, as having been explained here, who start from zero, who start from nothing. Are they able to repay the loans, the grant? I think we all have a problem with whether it's a loan or a grant, but whatever it is, but are they able to repay it as stipulated here? Or do we have any constraints? If there are constraints in terms of the payment, what are these constraints? Now, on slide 7, you do specify that you support both local and foreign-owned projects. Do you have, for instance, say percentage, that so much percentage is the foreign, so much percentage is the local? Particularly in order to protect the local business, because I would want to imagine that the foreign-owned project, those would are likely to be people who are probably very well versed with the business, tourism businesses, and probably their projects and their business plans would definitely be much, much better than some of the local ones. But what mechanisms do we have, for instance, to protect the local investment, the local people? At some point, somewhere, I think slide 12, there's a bullet there that you did not refer to, and yet I was interested in it. On slide 12, the last bullet there, which talks about a policy that needs to be reviewed. This is in connection with an investment, if, for instance, the project includes the residential development, where the shareholder is one and the same as the residential developer. You were saying that that is not to be considered, but you add there to say the policy is to be reviewed. Yeah, has that review started? Because I think it would also affect, you know, the small businesses, those who are starting, if, for instance, that kind of a policy remains. Now, on slide 18, the conditionalities for payment, slide 18, key conditionalities for grant payment. I hope I'm following this properly. Is that not too high for small businesses, for instance? Isn't that too high an expectation for small businesses? If so, again, do you find that they conform to those conditions? If they don't conform, what are the constraints again in this case? As for the grant, whether it's a grant or a loan, let's say it's a grant, I want to believe that then the department budget for this grant every year. So the grant appears in the budget every year. And let us say the repayments are 100%, 90 to 100%. In other words, the funds come back to the department every day. So, don't you then accumulate more and more and more funds in the name of this grant? Because it's paid back, but you also budget for it every year. I think you really need to explain to us exactly how this grant works, and then what happens to those funds that are repaid if, for instance, the department budget for it in the following year. Doesn't that make an accumulation, in which case then the grant should really expand to the extent that we'll be able to assist in a very, very beautiful way? I don't want to talk about Pula, like the colleague who has said, we gave up on Pula. We see Pula coming here, for instance, when the department is having its budget vote. Personally, I've been here for all these years, and at the beginning, excitedly, I really used to go to the Pula. And then they would explain and explain and explain. But I'm telling you, one has never got anything out of Pula. It always ends here with the display when you come for the party. But I'm not saying that there are no people who actually benefit from Pula. But as for, you know, the ordinary businesses out there, not only Tonizu, but others as well, Pula is giving up on Pula completely.
Chairperson, well, I'm covered. I wanted to ask a question about Pula, so I don't think it will be wise for me to do so. If I may ask, Chairperson, the presentation is strictly for the project that concerns tourism, or what? The presentation that we...
Whether it's tourism or it includes all sectors.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I wanted to check on slide 20, where they say TSP approved 1,254 project. I wanted to check only that how many are you on those are approved, and on your approved project, how many youth are successful at this point in time? The other one is that, Chair, what is the department doing to ensure that communities, especially those who are situated in rural areas, are aware on all funding and investment opportunities? And what marketing platform are you utilizing for this purpose? Lastly, Chair, on the... I don't know, because there is an outcry on the youth that says when they go to for this funding, they'll take them up and down, go and get this and this. After a long time, they don't approve anything, and they waste money for going up and down. Are you having people who assist people on how to fill those forms? Are you having where you tell them, what are you looking for before they can go up and down for looking for some monies and some papers? I wanted to check, do you assist people, most people who are marginalized, do you assist them on filling those applications? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mama. I think before you respond, let us look at also the issue of success rate, that is, people that actually receive grants and whether you are satisfied with your monitoring. I know it's about 2 years from 2008, and with your monitoring, whether you believe that perhaps you've got a reasonable success rate. The second one, the area, how did you come to the repayment period of 2 to 3 years, given the size of the loans? In some instances, perhaps other institutions would have had a longer period. And then the question of mentoring. Do you offer mentoring, actually taking people along and then assisting them, like filling forms, advising, and having actual mentors. And then the other area on microfinancing or very, very small loans that a number of people have asked about. Do you have a sort of village bank type of approach, like a Grameen bank model that you use for very, very small loans, or like perhaps craft workers that work together wanting a loan, or around a tourism attraction, the type of approach? And then also touching on the issue of communication, how do we communicate with our targeted entrepreneurs and targeted businesses? Do we have an approach? And lastly, do we make use of things like government offices? Yeah, I'm thinking of constituency offices that are almost in every rural area, giving them perhaps the papers and actually informing people where to apply for these things, because quite often we don't know where these offices are and what do you need to have in order to get a grant. And that's the cry that this BEE is limited to a few people that are very rich. So now, but the ordinary teacher that is retired, or the person that has been retrenched, but he is quite creative in as far as business is concerned. How do we start assisting these people? That are they also targeted? If so, how are they targeted? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start, as you suggested, with a question on success rate. Traditionally, in how we manage incentives, is that often for an incentive, you design an incentive, you implement, you monitor as the incentive is going along, and you do an impact assessment. The average time that we give for doing an impact assessment is 3 years. So we allow a project to be implemented for a three-year period in order to do then a detailed impact assessment. But before the impact assessment, as you're implementing the project, there are certain indicators that we monitor to check that the scheme is going in the right direction and is likely to achieve what you intend to achieve. Yes, there is more work that we can do on monitoring impact, and we've got a team currently working with us that's designing our monitoring framework to look at more detailed information to help us to measure and monitor impact. But despite that, there's certain information that we are already collecting on the type of investments we're making, the size of investments we're making, where they're located, and who we're giving the grant to. The important issue to consider is that projects can apply as early as a year before they plan to make an investment. So just because somebody has been approved for a grant does not necessarily mean a project is in place, does not necessarily mean there's a building and people are employed. There is some time that's allowed for the project to get off the ground. That is why in instances we have information on what people have projected and are not currently reporting on what has actually happened on the ground. We have only just started receiving our first claims on the incentive program, and at claim point, that's when we can collect information on the real-life situation on the projects that we've supported. In terms of whether the grant paid back, there's been quite a number of questions about, is this a grant, is it a loan, what are the payback conditions? This is not a loan. It's a grant that government gives. Is budgeted annually on the through the MTF cycle. It's tax-free, and people are given the grant, and it's calculated on a certain percentage based on the size of the project that you make. So this money we give to you, but you don't need to pay back. The way you pay us back is by creating the jobs, making the investment, but we don't expect people to pay them to pay us back. The key issue to note, yes.
Okay, excuse me. I think what is not clear here is that it is it's a 30% of perhaps an actual loan, and then that portion is a grant or what. I think that's where we are missing each other.
Okay.
It doesn't just come on its own, but it's part of a loan, the percentage of a loan also.
Okay. The grant is not part of a loan. Projects will come to us and they'll say, I want to put up an investment and my investment is going to cost me R1 million. How I'm going to fund this project is that I've got this amount of money that I'm putting myself. I've gone to the bank to lend this amount of money. Or they can say, I'm funding all of it myself. But in order to help me with my cash flow, I've decided to come to you to apply for the grant. In that instance, we look at that project and we look at what size is it. In this case, it's a R1 million project. It's below R5 million. We look at, of that R1 million project, there are certain investments, there are certain assets that qualify, that we use to calculate the size of the grant. So we look at what are they spending on their furniture and fittings and other equipment that they need for the facility. What are they spending on their land and buildings, or if they've got vehicles, what are they spending on vehicles? We take all those costs that we call our qualifying investment costs. The costs of those qualifying investment costs, they can get a grant for those. So for projects that are below R5 million, that grant is 30% of their qualifying investment cost. So it's a qualifying investment cost in furniture, fittings and equipment, in land and buildings, and in commercial vehicles. So we don't give you a loan. We don't expect to pay it back. You come to us with an application, a business plan, at the beginning of your investment to say, this is what I plan to do. This is how I plan. This is how currently it's going to be funded. And based on that, we work out what qualifies, those investment costs that qualify, and you get a grant as a percentage of your qualifying investment cost. Then another area that's caused confusion is the issue about it being payable over 2 years or 3 years. The key issue is we don't give you the grant at the beginning of the investment. So you don't come to us and say, I want to invest in a guest house. And we say, we'll give you R5 million. We don't give you that R5 million at the beginning. We pay that, we spread the R5 million payment over a period of time. The reason why we spread it over a period of time is, there was a principal question about saying, how do we then make the grant make a difference if we then saying at the same time, you know, we don't pay it at the beginning. But part of the reason is that because we use the grant to help you with your cash flow. So we don't give it to you at the beginning of the incentive, but we can give it to you through various points in your incentive program. So if you're a project below R5 million, if you get a grant of R1 million or R1.5 million, we will then give you R500,000 each year. Okay? So each year you will come to us and say, when I applied to you a year ago, I said to you, I'm going to invest in a lodge that costs R5 million, and I said that I'm going to create 8 jobs. Here's my performance so far. This year, I've been able to put on the ground 3 rooms.
And of those rooms, this is the amount of people I'm employing at this stage, and this is my BE status. Based on that, we can then release the first payment. Then you can come back 6 months later and say, I've been able to move further in terms of my performance requirements. I've now added more rooms, or I've done, and those requirements, there was also a question to say, those requirements are quite high in terms of the projected requirements that we've put in place. The reason why those performance requirements aren't high is because they're not, we don't specify to applicants to say, you need to make an investment of X. People come to us with their own business plans and say, I'm going to put on the ground an investment of 1 million, and I think I can employ this amount of people. These are my financials for the year. So we try and hold people to the promises that they give us to say, okay, if you said you're going to employ X amount of people, in order for us to hold you to it and make sure that from a scheme perspective, we can create the jobs that we project at the beginning of the year, you need to meet them. We also realize that sometimes you can say, I'm going to spend 1 million, and things change in the market. You don't quite spend 1 million, you end up spending 800,000 or even spending 1.2 million. So that's why we say a percentage of what you project. So we realize that sometimes we've tried to create a room for flexibility and a room for maneuver. We also recognize that certain things may change in the market. There may be periods where the market doesn't perform well and so on, and that we would then scheme-wide make a judgment call to say, for this year, do we need to relax these because we know certain things have happened? Or a particular applicant may come to us and say, for instance, we've got a case currently where somebody made an investment and they had a fire. So they certain things they're not able to show us because that fire situation has affected them. In those instances, we will then look at that on a case-by-case basis. The question about mentoring, what mentoring do we give applicants, what advice, how do we help people with application forms? In terms of mentoring, we do not have capacity within the program to mentor applicants, but what we try and do is work with other agencies whose role is to do this. We trying to improve our working relationship with the TEP program that specifically offers various support for the Tourism Enterprise Partnership Program that offers mentoring support, business plan support, application for people in the tourism sector. We also have CEDA, which also offers some mentoring support for people within the tourism sector. In terms of our role in relation to marketing, what we do in relation to mentoring, what we do is advise applicants on applications that have not been successful. So we will tell them why it's not successful, and also if we're processing an application and pick up issues, we go back to the client and say, this is the issue, fix this, and so on. We also have a unit within the DTI called the Business Development Unit, whose sole role is to try and facilitate access to the incentive scheme. So they would assist applicants with questions they might have with the applications. And their mandate is also to go around the country and ensure that they develop partnerships with municipalities, different regions within the country, give presentations at different fora on the incentive scheme, again as a way of trying to facilitate access. So they are the main method that we use to try and facilitate access is to try and work with in partnership with provincial, regional, local agencies that are on the ground whose mandate is to work with small business. What we try and do is make sure that we give them the information about what's available and how to access it, and they could then help their constituencies to access the information. there was a question, is this presentation about tourism or other sectors? It's only about the tourism program. It forms part of a program which doesn't just support tourism, but for the purposes of this presentation, I have only focused on the tourism support program.
Chairperson, so I cannot ask a question about certain, not today.
Not today.
But you can promise me that some other time that chance will come.
Yes, I think it can only come under DTI. Shops and everything. Yes.
Oh, I see.
But yeah, it's totally.
It's unfortunate.
Well, except if perhaps they can, after the session, you can check with them whom to.
Thank you very much.
Who will address your problem?
Thank you very much.
Chair, you also asked a question about, giving assistance to smaller entities. We do have other programs, as I mentioned, for example, the cooperative support, cooperative incentive scheme, which is focused much more on the smaller micro enterprises. And again, it encourages people of two or more individuals to come together to form a cooperative. It gives you a grant of 300,000, and it helps with buying equipment or stock or whatever the cooperative needs in order to get the cooperative going. We've also got a Black Business Supplier Development Program. Again, it's focused on the smaller enterprises. It gives a grant to a maximum of R1 million. And again, it helps you with getting equipment and also some of the softer help with marketing your business and promoting your business. But as I say, for the purposes of this, we were made to understand that the interest was on the tourism support program. There was a question about exactly how many enterprises did we support. As I've mentioned that in the presentation that you received before this, it reflected activity for the last financial year. And then I've just tried to update it from inception to date, and we've supported 220 projects. By supported, I mean we've received applications, and those applications we said, we are approving you to make an investment of X amount, and this is the size grant that we will give you. In terms of are those projects successful or not, what we are able to confirm at this stage, you'll see bullet point 4 shows that of the ones that we approved, we know at the end, this is statistics at the end of March. I unfortunately wasn't able to get a more recent number, but there are 115 of those 220 that have already started. And we are currently collecting data of who's cancelled and so on. But at the moment, I can confirm that 115 have already started of the ones that we've approved. And some of those approvals will be approvals that would have been made in July. So it's very recent approvals. Local versus foreign, majority of what we support is local enterprises. In terms of exact numbers, I don't have exact statistics with me at the moment, but I would say in excess of 95% of what we support is locally owned enterprises. In terms of foreign investments, they're very few, and it tends to be maybe South African investors who are having operators that are foreign. So you might have a hotel that's located in South Africa and it's owned by South African shareholders, but they might get an operator like I think of a foreign operator, hotel operator, to then manage and run the hotel. But in terms of the owners of a hotel, they would be local owners.
What I really wanted to find out is whether there is any policy at the city exactly to say so much percentage of this grant must go to the local business people, and this percentage can go to the foreign-owned business. That's what I wanted to find out. But I can see you're saying that in terms of capitality, 95% is local. But isn't there a policy in order to protect the local
citizens? No, there isn't a policy written into the program that says X amount has to be local and X amount has to be foreign. The experience of running a similar program in the past has been that there's actually been very little foreign participation. Most investors have been local investors, but there isn't anything that excludes foreign investors. In terms, there was a question about Cater and Housing and Western Cape, that we're excluding them, and when you look at those, that actually there may be quite a lot of rural areas and so on in those areas. Just to clarify, we're not excluding the provinces, but we've excluded the metros in the provinces. So we've excluded Cape Town, we've excluded Durban, and we've excluded Joburg. There was also a question about the scale, that starting at 5 million, we're excluding a lot of small enterprises. We're not starting at 5 million, we're saying from 5 million and below, we treat them differently. So we do accept investments that are much smaller than 5 million, but the difficulty is that you would have to sustain the 8 jobs. So I guess it does exclude the very small enterprises, and as I've said, we've got other support programs that try to deal with those enterprises. Okay, I think we've clarified the issue about it's a grant, so nobody had to pay back the grant. Who are the level 4 and level 3 contributors? What we do is use the BE, broad-based BE scorecard, which has 7 indicators that it looks at, such as your shareholding, your ownership, what you do on enterprise development and skills development and so on. And based on the performance on those criteria, you're given a rating on the BE scorecard. And we use that as a measure to measure to what extent black empowered, for want of a better word, as a proxy for trying to broaden participation. And there was a question about what is the annual budget. We have an annual budget for this year of 347 million. That 347 million is for the enterprise investment program. I mentioned at the beginning that this tourism program is a sub-program of the enterprise investment program. So that 347 is divided between the two programs. We don't necessarily say X amount for tourism, X amount for manufacturing. It just depends on the interest in the market. The analysis, there is no sense that we do some kind of analysis of the projects in terms of market needs, market analysis. As I mentioned in the evaluation criteria and the evaluation, we will look at the business plan of that particular project. And part of the business plan is looking at marketing strategy, the experience of the people behind the project and so on. So there is some market analysis that forms part of the decisions we make on whether to approve or not to approve. Have any businesses failed, and what do we do to recover this? As I mentioned, that It's a grant, so it's not repayable. So we would not do anything to recover money if, for instance, a business did not succeed. We try and, as much as we can, make the assessment at entry as thorough as possible to try and reduce the likelihood that later on, you know, people would not be successful, would have to be cancelled and so on. When people get to a point where they're supposed to claim and don't claim, that will be the earliest point that we will have an indication of whether a business has not been able to establish or not. Contractually, they're also required to confirm with us within 60 days. When they apply, they tell us when they expect their project to commence operation. And within 60 days of that date, we require them to confirm to us that they are on course, they will start. Or if they won't start, that there's a delay, and indicate to us what the nature of the delay is so we can make an assessment. So we do have some data on whether projects are likely to establish or not, which is where some of the information on what's established so far comes from. In terms of the people that adjudicate on their experience, do they have expertise in the tourism industry? Yes, we have a committee that has a range of skills that sits and adjudicates on the applications that we have. It consists of officials within the department from a policy side, from an incentive administration background. We also have representatives of industry and representatives from the National Treasury and people who do have investment experience specifically in the tourism sector. What's the cost of implementing this? I unfortunately do not have that data to hand, but we can make it available to the committee as a follow-up. But we do have a team of about 30 people within DTI that administer the incentive. They do not only administer this incentive, they administer it in conjunction with other incentives. But we can make that data available to the committee members. And it's typically an analysis we would normally do as well with our in-depth impact assessments when we look at what really is the impact of this and what's the return on government's investment. Okay, the issue of is it a grant or not, we've covered. Also the issue of why are the jobs projected, I've tried to speak to that to say the reason that the jobs are projected and not actual jobs at this stage is firstly because sometimes there's long lead times between an application being lodged and an application actually establishing. So at application stage, they give us data on what they're projecting. The earliest that we collect information on actual jobs is at claim stage, and currently the earliest that people can claim is 6 months after start of production. So it's at that stage that we can collect that data. And we've only just, I would say in the last 2 months, started receiving many of our claims on the program. In terms of the comments around black or using different criteria for black, they noted, and it's something that we'll feed back to the review. We're having a strategic review of the program this year, we will feed that back into the committee. But in terms of our definition of what is black, we use as defined in the Black Economic Empowerment document. In terms of what do we what do we give support for? If somebody wants to buy taxis to start a tourism project, yes. I indicated that the range of activities that we supported, as indicated on the slide that's up. You can have instances, we were looking at a project last week of somebody that's currently in a commuter taxi business and they want to make a shift. They want to shift their business and do more tourism-focused activities. And so they're buying more vehicles, have partnered with a B&B to airport transfers for that person, do tours around the country for that person. They've partnered also with a tour operator that's outsourcing some of their overflow work to them. So that is the type of, we can support something like that. Or somebody who says, yes, I want, I've got a house, I want to convert it into a B&B. We support those kind of investments. Or somebody says, there's an opportunity in this area to, have a lodge, or you know, there's a range of different types of activities that we support. And so it's not just large scale hotels. We do have some hotel investments that we've supported. Supported some lodges, we've supported some backpacker facilities, tour operators, small museums have come to us saying we will want to establish museums. The gatekeeping criteria, to say that maybe some of our criteria is too high and that it keeps some people out, and we have, when we first launched the program, we had a lot of feedback around that area to say maybe some of the requirements that we've built into the program, particularly around the job requirement, are too high, and the reason is that in the past what we've learned is unless you set a minimum requirement around jobs, it would be very difficult to encourage industry to create those jobs. And I think that's the difference between an incentive and any other type of support, is that what you're trying to do is to give government money to projects in order to encourage them to behave in a particular way. And the behavior that we want to encourage in the tourism industry is to encourage people to create more jobs, in certain locations, and to be look at black economic, broadened black economic participation, which is precisely why we've built in the requirements that we've built into the program. Pre-screening, I think I've spoken to. Provinces, on the provincial spread, we've tried to provide a map which just gives percentages on the different provinces that participate. We don't have it in number terms on the slide, but we can also make that available if it's required.
The Kumbok, and then the
thanks, Chair. Now I'm really worried, because as it turns out, this is a gift. It's not a loan. It's not even a soft loan. It's just a gift. We didn't know what we were going to get before we got the female. So, as it happens, there's been a lot of emphasis on race in this presentation, in terms of who gets it, who doesn't, in terms of the criteria. So let's talk about race, okay? And I want to ask the presenter one question. I want to present a scenario. Somebody in 1990, who is a black person, says, I'm now going to be free in a couple of years' time. I'm going to start a tourism business. got nothing because of apartheid and because of historically disadvantaged circumstances of that individual grew up in. Everybody understands that. So he loans money from people, okay? And he starts a tourism business. Because he's loaning money from these people, they're probably charging him a lot more than the banks are charging him. But he perseveres, maybe a she, and 20 years later he's got a tourism business where most of the money has been paid out to the people that lent him the money, maybe to the banks, but he's paid out and he's gone through 1998 with interest rates of 24%, and he's struggled, but he's survived. Okay, and good for 20 years, been sort of modest business, and now he's been taxed. Now DTI comes along, and they say, we're going to take your tax money because actually it's not government money, it's taxpayers' money. It's a problem that most civil servants have. They don't realize there's no such thing as government money. It's all taxpayers' money or ratepayers' money. Okay, they take taxpayers' money, and then somebody next door to him in Orlando, where he set up his little business, his tourism business, says, okay, I need some land, and I want a building, and I want a passenger vehicle to run township tours in Orlando, and I need some furniture and fittings, all of which this program subsidizes. And I'm going to spend 10 million rand. The government now takes his competitors' money and everybody else that pays tax, and of that 10 million, gives him 3 million mahala for free. So he can now go and undercut that guy that's worked his whole life and paid ruinous rates of interest and put him out of business. So you're taking his own money to use to put him out of business. That's what's going to happen. In 2 years' time, when he's got all his money, he's going to say, I'm now going to sell this business to my friend. And he's going to sell it for 10 million rand, and he's going to make a clear 3 million rand profit because, as we've now turned out, as the presenter's now told us, he doesn't have to pay that money back. So he can make 3 million rand in his pocket, tax-free, as we've now been told. Okay? Because he doesn't even have to make one, he doesn't have to add 1 cent of value because he's got a 3 million rand kickstart, which his competitor, who's also black, doesn't have. In fact, it gets even worse, Chairperson. If he really wanted to be corrupt, and we've got a problem in this country with corrupt people, he can actually go buy the land and the building and the car from a friend at a highly inflated price, and he'll still get his 30% discount. And then 3 years' time, they can actually repay the money, and now the government is sponsored not 30% of his business, but maybe 40% or 50% of his business at the cost to the taxpayer. And I've got to ask myself, this scheme is so fraught with fraudulent potential, and it is so unfair to people who've actually done it the hard way. Why are we doing this? Why are we practicing uncompetitive behavior and actually giving some people a 50% competitive edge over other people? You can leave race out of it entirely, but I'm saying if you want to reduce it to race, which the entire thrust of this presentation has actually gone to, about how some people will be favored and others weren't, regardless of what they did during the apartheid years. Even if you left race out of it, it is still unfair. Now, I can't understand why we're putting half a billion rand into this to actually make some people get a competitive advantage over other people, even when they are of the same race.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just thinking loudly. So we've got the answers, and then because at the first time we didn't know that it's a grant or loan, so we have been clarified about what we were not sure about. But I'm just saying, as I have said, I'm thinking loud. In all this former homeland, there lies more factories that are not used. So the presentation here, it doesn't get into that. Because I think some of these factories were used as people were doing something for tourism in this factories. So my question is, I don't know if I get the presenter here, because sometimes this language of tourism, it slips out of my mind. I heard them saying the existing, it seems they don't support the existing. I didn't get them clear. I'm saying it under correction. because I was asking myself, there are so many people who are not working, who wanted to get started. It wasn't wise that if they fund, the government can assist those people who wanted to can bring back the economy of their area. As I have mentioned, that in most of the former homelands, there are factories that are still standing even today, standing empty. So I'm just putting this into the basket because really we are, I'm speaking in terms of the homelands. Homelands is rural or whatever, farms, whereby we've got many factories. They are not working because people don't have even a single cent to start up. So I'm saying this program, it wasn't wise for the government. I'm saying us because we have had the information. It wasn't wise that some kind of assistance by us to those homeland, because we people are flocking now to this big, I don't know, I call it elephant, because everybody want to go to Tegwini, Devon, everybody want to go to Joburg. We come with buses here in Western Cape. We are going to alleviate some of the problems that we are having, especially people flocking, all of us wanting to come to the center where there is life. Can't we make life at this homeland? I'm just throwing it. I don't know if it's relevant to this presentation. Thank you.
For, I think if the activity will be tourism somehow, it will be. Yes, Mama Zgala.
Chairperson, there is something that I would like to get from the presenter, because as far as I know, Chair, people, their applications fail because of their business plan. You find that somewhere, somehow, they don't understand because of the language that has been used. And what I want to ask from the presenter, does the department give the people the format how the business place should be, you know, or you just do it on your own? You have all the expertise to run the business, maybe, but now when it comes to, because I think that is the most part of it that makes most people fail.
That end there, because we are left with about 6 minutes. But also now that Kula is financing directly, how are its interest rates going to be compared to the banks, and what is the interest? What are the targets? Is it going to be, and how accessible will it be to the public? That Kula is. I understand that it is now you will be in a position now to directly approach it.
Thank you, Chair. I think when I started, I tried to locate what the tourism program is doing within the national Tourism Act mandate and the strategy, the national strategy on tourism, and I the national strategy has a number of key objectives, which is to increase volume of tourists, improve geographic spread, increase tourist spend, improve seasonality patterns, improve length of stay, promote transformation. And I indicated that in relation to the incentives, how we contribute to that strategy is through our focus on sustainable job creation, improving geographic spread, and promoting transformation. And what we're trying to do is to try and support those people who would otherwise not be able to invest in tourism. The focus of the program isn't on black enterprises, the rules around transformation. The focus of it isn't about blackness. What we use is the broad-based BEE framework, which looks at a number of issues in defining what contribution to broad-based black economic empowerment is. There's only one aspect where there's a criteria which speaks to black-owned enterprises, and that's a minimum number of jobs that are required for projects below 5 million. I've noted the concerns that have been raised by the honourable member, and as part of the review of the program, we will feed that back and look at how you know, whether that's appropriate and how we address it. But the key issue is that the program is around the requirements is around trying to broaden participation, and how we define broaden participation is in line with the broad-based BE framework, which isn't about blackness. There was a question about factories that are
Nkrumbo, let us, if you want to ask questions, please direct them to me. Please. If you want clarification, direct that to me and not to the presenters.
And Chair, what I was trying to say is that the broad-based black economic empowerment framework looks at a number of issues. It looks at shareholding, it looks at skills, it looks at management structure, it looks at issues of gender, issues of disability, and so on. So the idea is that it is broad-based. And in terms of the projects that we support a range of projects from a wide range of applicants. There was also a question about the factories, that a number of factories in rural areas that we have. We have a manufacturing program which is largely focused on that and trying to promote investments in the manufacturing sector. So a lot of those types of factories, they would be we would give incentives for people who would want to move into those areas and start production facilities within those areas. There was a question about giving assistance with the application, with the business plan, that often the reason why projects fail is because not enough assistance is given on the business plan. What we have tried to do is we've outlined a format of what we would like in the business plan and what are the different elements that go into the business plan. We've also tried to ensure that it's in line with the norms, so that if you do a business plan for us, you can also use it for another purpose. You don't have a particular format for us, and then when you go to another funder or bank, you have to comply with a different format. We also have other programs within the department that support applicants to put together business plans and so on. Chair, in relation to Kula Direct, I'm not in a position to be able to answer your questions around the interest rates, but the understanding is that Kula should be offering development finance, and that as such that the rates should be competitive, if not better than what's offered in the market. The idea is that it's around development rather than what the commercial market would offer. But we can also go back to the department and make special requests for any direct information you'd like on Kula and their new setup.
Okay, I think that brings us to the end of the first part of our morning. Well, that is the hearing. Yes,
I'm sorry for voicing my frustration, but this is exactly the point. The presenter has not answered my question. I asked a very specific question, and she answered everybody else's question except mine. I didn't ask her about BBBEE. So I don't know why this whole thing came in about BBB. It's not about black economic empowerment. I mean, I really don't get that. I asked her about the anti-competitive nature of this project, and I painted two scenarios for it to illustrate why I thought it could be abused and is unfair. She hasn't answered the question. If we are going to have committee hearings and people from the department are coming to address us, we can't be treated like children and be allowed to put questions which are then not answered. So through you, Chairperson, with respect, and you know I do respect you, please can the presenter be directed to answer my question?
Perhaps rephrase your question, because some of these things are quite policy issues, political. So I do not know. I mean, if now we pressurize an official on political issues, sort of tends to be unfair. And then I think it is better to ask the minister that question, some of these questions, except if perhaps the question is, the point I got from you is that you said that some of these policies favor one entrepreneur at the cost of the other. The essence of the message, when you talked about the Soweto entrepreneur getting a taxi and then the other one has struggled over the years and so forth. I think that's a point to everyone. I don't think we agree with that. But when it comes down to things like BEE and so forth, except if she is not within the code, Then she has to account. But if she is within the code, then it becomes sort of a political issue. But perhaps for purposes of clarity, just come again.
Thanks, Chair. I'll redirect. I mean, the question I asked about BBBE was actually my first round of questions, which wasn't actually answered either. But let's leave that. I take your point that it's a policy issue, and I will put those questions to the Minister. So let me ask a very simple question arising from my principal concern with this thing. If somebody had approached DTI with, what's the phrase is usually, with qualifying assets worth 10 million rands and got, therefore, a 30% subsidy, because it is a subsidy, it's a gift, all right, got 3 million rand from DTI, and 2 years later, after having got that 3 million rand, sold the business for 10 million rand, am I actually correct in assuming that because it is a grant or a gift, and also because of what I heard the presenter say earlier in the presentation, that they have no recourse to that money, that person can pocket the 3 million rand and walk away. Now, that's not a policy thing. That's a simple departmental procedure. Can I have a yes or a no to that question?
Chair, it is correct to say that if you invest and after a number of years you sell on the business, we have no recourse to that procedure. However, in terms of our contract with applicants, is that the investments that we support you for have to be in place for a five-year period, which is a period within which we monitor the program and that particular project. So what happens outside that period is difficult for the department doesn't currently have a mechanism to monitor that.
Okay, but I think the point is taken as well. That the program is 2 years old. You need to look at the gaps and to see the potential problems in the program. But I think also you have got auditors that look into your policies and these things, and then they alert you on potentially fraud prone areas of these things, which may allow either fraud or favoritism in some instances. Perhaps if you have mechanisms against favoritism and nepotism, which is the same thing for sort of tell us those things. If they are not there, I think they need to be put in place.
In terms of the mechanisms that we do have is that all our guidelines are clearly available to the public. In terms of the criteria we use to adjudicate and assess projects, that's available to the public. So, and we try to make it fairly simple in the sense that before you apply, you've got a very good idea of whether you meet the requirements or not. We also have an appeals procedure in instances where applicants feel that they have been disadvantaged in some way. There's an appeals process where they can appeal the decisions that have been made, and they can also ask for detailed information on what basis their projects were rejected. More specifically on the area of fraud and abuse, we have very detailed procedures. We've agreed with the independent regulatory authority of auditors, IRBA. We've agreed very detailed procedures that projects that have been approved for investment need to comply by that the auditors need to carry out to verify the investments that we've made. We've also had processes ourselves where we go to the individual projects to verify that the assets are in place, to look at the supporting documentation, the supporting invoices, to support the type of claims that people are making. We've specified sampling techniques and so on in order to be able to test and give ourselves comfort that in terms of taxpayers' money, we are sure that we haven't built into the system's weaknesses that mean that people would unnecessarily abuse the system. The idea of the program is to try and promote competitiveness in the tourism industry by looking at certain market failures that we've identified in the tourism sector and that as the strategy has identified. And those market failures are that not enough jobs are supported, that there is a weakness. There's a study that the Department of Tourism has done on a weakness around the level of transformation in the sector, the geographic spread of the economic activity, and that's why the project is structured in the way it's done. It's informed by policy work that the Department of Tourism has done in conjunction with the policy department within the DTI. And based on their definition of what the market failures are in the tourism industry, we then designed an incentive that would try to speak and address those market failures that have been identified. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you.
I hope I've addressed all the questions.
I think so. Mamshi?
I just wanted to make an observation based on this presentation, Chair, if I may.
Okay.
I think that when we, in the future, talk about the contribution tourism makes to the country's economy, to GDP, we must subtract from that amount of money these gifts that the Department of Trade and Industry is giving to companies that banks find too risky to finance. I think this is a very dangerous policy. I think that we actually don't realize the cost that it is to the taxpayer. And it's not correcting market failures of tourism. It's addressing social engineering of the ANC government, because there may not be tourism development in the rural areas because there is no tourist demand for it. And I think that we're actually financing an ANC election strategy here.
Well, in fact, I think let us fight for synergies in the country and not for conflict, and let us identify problems, and then the actual reality in tourism is that it is spread. It has got an uneven spread. It goes to Gauteng, it goes to Western Cape, and it goes to Durban, KwaZulu-Natal. And then this program tries to address that imbalance in terms of tourism spread. And then it is a fact also that there is virtually no transformation in this industry. So when we argue, let us argue around the issues that perhaps the attempts to address transformation are not the best, and perhaps compete around the best strategies. And then the issue that transformation is not a market failure. Some would argue that it is, because market forces normally do not reach as far as that, because there has to be assets in place in order to compete. There has to be knowledge in order to compete, and so forth. So let us try and look at equity as the constitution. Our constitutional people tried to project, and see how best to do that, and then I think that will take us that will take us further, and there are going to be debates all the time. Let us make sure that we address the objectives of the nation as encapsulated in our constitution. It says we've got to be inclusive and so forth and so forth and so forth. And then the more we discuss as different parties coming from different areas, the better we are going to fare. And sometimes there are going to be strong disagreements, but disagreements were foreseen, they were there, that's why we're having different parties. That's why we are having a free media. That's why we are having free expectation. And it can be worse. So let us try and respect each other across the color lines and pray for a better South Africa where we cannot humanly make things possible. But I'm sure that we can make the South Africa the best country ever. We have done so through the World Cup. We are going to do so, but we are going to have disagreements. And disagreements are there for everywhere. Every family has disagreements. But successful families
differ from unsuccessful families because of how they handle disagreements. And South Africa eventually is going to handle disagreements as one of the best countries in the world. So let us strive and make our country better. And then there are flaws in some of the approaches of the support program, but that's a start. It's only 2 years old. It needs these robust inputs in some areas so as for us to improve it. In some instances, we need to make up proposals, and Mr. Groomborg and Ms. Shin have made very, very, very positive inputs to the committee, and let us continue doing that and make sure that our energies make our country the best in the world in whatever we do. And with those words, let us then go to the next two item announcements, but I think there are people that would like to talk to the presenters after this meeting. So for their benefit, let us just make two announcements and then see how we close. The first announcement is that annual reports of the Department of SA Tourism for 2009-2010 financial year have been tabled. So I think copies are already here. The second thing is that we are invited to attend the World Tourism Day celebrations to be held in Limpopo on the 27th of September. The arrangements are still going to be finalized by the committee, and then we shall communicate further next week. And lastly, but Ms. Shin is going to cease to be a member of this committee. She has been redeployed by her party, the DA, to another committee. But let us thank Ms. Shin for her commitment. She has submitted a lot of inputs to the committee, cultural tourism, rural tourism, and she has dedicated member of the committee. I think on behalf of the committee, I thank Ms. Shin for the good work. Yeah. We thank you very much. And we wish you all the best in the other committee. Which committee are you going to? Science and technology. Science and technology will all be the better. We hope that the DA is going to supply another member who is having the same verve and vigor in moving us and the country forward. But thank you very much, Mrs. Shin. Oh, the Shadow Minister, Mr. Groomborg.
Yes, thank you, Chair, for those very kind words on behalf of my colleague. But it won't be much consolation to you, but the member who's going to join us, the Honourable Ter Blanche, when she was a whip in the NCOP, was known as Killer Ter Blanche. So fun awaits all of us.
No. It's not in the name. No, but thank you, and thank you very much. And then that concludes the business of this committee today. Thank you. Thank you.